So what are Democratic candidates for president asked about when they interact with constituents in Iowa? Do certain issues rise above all others? Annie Linsky from The Washington Post told me that guns and healthcare are really the big issues. Another one that she says gets brought up in every campaign event? Climate change. And the catalyst for that passion is this current administration.
I think they are so frustrated by what they hear coming out of this White House, which is a denial of climate change and a sort of rolling back the already, as they see it, kind of weak climate-related, you know, rules that exist. And I think that is, you know, I don't want to quite say radicalizing, but it is elevating this issue to where I have certainly hadn't seen it before.
Earlier this week, we heard from Democratic hopefuls at CNN's Climate Town Hall about how they'll tackle the issue. But we wanted to hear from you. Do you think government should do more to curb climate change, even if it comes at the expense of economic growth?
Hi, this is Alice from Anaheim, and of course we should take action to stop climate change, even if it impacts the economy. If we don't take drastic action now, there's not going to be an economy to care about.
We never know what kind of responses we'll get from listeners, but this time it seemed many of you agreed about what's at stake if the U.S. government refuses to act on climate change.
Hi, this is Mark from Brookport, Illinois. In regard to your question about climate change and doing something about it, even if there's economic impacts, my question back to you guys is, what are the economic impacts? What have they already been? And what are they going to be if we do nothing? I think it's pretty obvious that they're going to be pretty severe. So, yes, I think we have to do something if it's not too late already.
This is Fred Brinkley from Waxhaw, North Carolina. I think the government should spare no expense to fight climate change. I'm a firm believer in Mother Nature, and I love clean air and clean water.
What good is economic growth, which is a short-term gain, when in the process the world becomes uninhabitable? Besides, it is possible to have your cake and eat it too, because fighting and preparing for climate change provides an opportunity for economic growth in new technologies, new jobs, and new recreational areas.
Hi, I'm Lindsay from South Plainfield, New Jersey. What good is economic growth if you're underwater, in constant storms, in constant drought, if your home is on fire, or if you're under attack from new or old diseases? There are some problems that money can't solve.
Finally, many of you told us the people who will be left to deal with the consequences of a warming planet are those least at fault.
My name is Marnie from Livingston, New Jersey. Without action to curb damage to the environment now, the world we're leaving to our children will be damaged forever.
My name is Judy King, and I'm from San Anselmo, California. And I feel very strongly that the government should do much more to curb climate change at the expense of economic growth. We have one precious, small, fragile planet to take care of, and we have an obligation to future generations to take this responsibility seriously. The United States should be a global environmental leader, and I'm frustrated and just heartsick that we are no longer actively supporting the Paris Accord.
Economic growth is always in flux. Governments are the mechanism for addressing such conditions worldwide, much more than any individual or group of individuals, no matter how wealthy or charismatic. Since when do we own the right to play God with the condition of the entire world? What is better for humans overall? How quickly do we want to descend into chaos, tribalism, suffering, and destruction? Is that worth a pocketful of dollars?
This is Maria Asensio calling from Boca Raton, Florida. When it comes to climate change, we will pay. We can pay now or we can pay later. Later, it always costs more.
In the calls from you, we heard that climate change should be a top priority. But that wasn't always the case. The issue didn't make much of an appearance in 2012 or the 2016 campaigns. Today, of course, every Democratic candidate for president has put the issue front and center.
They don't get to make our kids sick. They don't get to shorten lifespans because it increases their profitability.
I strongly believe this is a fight against powerful interests.
People
who are economically disadvantaged and people of color. Many times they're the ones left behind. And when those houses get ruined, and you can see it in the Bahamas right now, when those houses go down, it's often the houses of those that can afford it the least.
We are the most powerful country on earth. We should be leading the world to a global energy transition, and you have a president who thinks it's not real.
John Della Volpe, director of polling at the Harvard Kennedy School Institute of Politics, has been tracking attitudes of climate and the environment among Americans between the ages of 18 and 29. To John, few areas have seen as much of a change in opinion than climate change among this cohort. But he also cautions that this generation isn't unified in their opinions of what to do about solving the crisis.
Over the last decade, specifically over the last 5 years, we've seen some pretty dramatic change on climate, more so than most other questions that we ask about. The question that we ask is it an agree or disagree statement, but government should do more to curb climate change, even at the expense of economic growth. A decade ago, as many young people, 18 to 29-year-olds, agreed with that statement as disagreed with that statement. 4 years ago, there was a 17-point difference in favor of agree, that government should do more to combat climate change. Today, that 17-point margin is now 30 points. 46% agree with that statement. Only 16% disagree.
Is it possible to understand what led to this change?
There is a sense of responsibility in the role and the nature of government in terms of what it owes our citizens and what we owe other citizens here and around the world. And I think kind of the value that we're seeing kind of through this research is that's kind of the sense that people aren't only concerned about themselves, but they're concerned about other Americans, other citizens, and the future. And of course, when looking through that prism, through the news and the news cycles and the role of government, I think it only kind of exacerbates kind of the issue and brings it to the tension. And of course, now we have, you know, a few dozen candidates running for president who have also made this a significant element of their agenda for 2020.
And how does it break down among younger voters by party? I mean, are younger voters as divided on this issue by party as older voters are?
Yes, without question. In the spring, there was a series of questions we asked around climate and environment, one of which identified that 45% of the 18 to 29-year-old cohort identified climate as a crisis that needs urgent action. If you're a Democrat, 63% said it was a crisis which demanded urgent action. However, if you were a young Republican, only 21% identified with that statement or that characterization. So one of the areas in our polling that shows the most significant divide between parties.
I was reading about sort of the political ramifications of the issue of climate change. And I want to read something to you. This is a Political magazine story and get your response to this idea, which is that something like the Green New Deal, while mobilizing the green young voters, Dems need to beat Trump in 2020, even if it's mobilizing them with rhetoric and tactics that make establishment Dems uncomfortable. So the question being, in order to get these young voters who are engaged and who say this is a crisis on the climate, to get them involved in voting or supporting a candidate, that Democrats are going to have to really put forward dramatic and pretty groundbreaking policies that could make more moderate Democrats or sort of establishment Democrats uncomfortable.
I respectfully disagree with that perspective. Perhaps there are important cohorts, you know, within a primary electorate, but I wouldn't say that it's fair to paint, you know, in a generation or an 18 to 29-year-old cohort with that broad brush. And I'll give you kind of a ground that and a little bit of data from the spring 2019 poll. You know, this poll was written, you know, within the several weeks after the Green New Deal was announced, and we offered up a couple of the key points. And we asked the 18 to 29-year-old voters, you know, whether or not this was what they were thinking about in terms of about the kind of practical solutions that were necessary. We said to combat climate change, some elected officials have endorsed ideas like upgrading all existing buildings in the country and overhauling transportation systems to reduce emissions. In general, does this accurately describe your views regarding proposals like this? And 31% say, yes, this represents the kind of bold action we need. But another third says they might be good, but we need to know more. We need to be somewhat cautious so we don't impact economic growth. So I think the lesson is that, yes, it's a crisis. There's essentially kind of agreement with a supermajority, I think, of voters, or certainly an important issue. But I think that there's far less known in terms of what young people have identified as the proper way to approach it in terms of how, you know, how big the solutions ought to be and how, you know, how bold they ought to be. They're interested in a meaningful conversation about the solutions and their impact, especially with a generation that is just beginning to get its feet under them, you know, with all the other expenses of housing and student loans and cost of living, et cetera, et cetera. So it has to be part of a overall, I think, economic conversation.
There's another thing that you found in this poll that I thought was interesting, this tension between younger voters and baby boomers.
The big picture, you know, in 2000, when we started the survey, there was very little difference between a 25-year-old and 65-year-old voter. When we look at that gap and you look at the exit polls in the Bush v. Gore campaign, there was only a 6-point gap between the younger 18 to 29-year-old voter and the 60-plus voter. Today, when you look at the midterms of last year, that 6-point gap turn into a 38-point gap by generation. There are very few, we talk about the gender gap and the race gap, there are very few gaps bigger in American politics today than this kind of generational divide, and it's only growing.
John Della Volpe, thank you so much for coming in and speaking with me.
Thanks for having me.
John Della Volpe is a director of polling at the Harvard Kennedy School Institute of Politics.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.